Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution. Hello there, I'm Andrew McDermott. Today I'm speaking with paleoentomologist Dr. Günter Bächli, a senior fellow with Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Bächli previously served as curator for amber and fossil insects in the Department of Paleontology at the State Museum of Natural History in Stuttgart, Germany. He earned his PhD in geosciences from Eberhard Karls University in Tübingen. Bächli specializes in the fossil history and systematics of insects, the most diverse group of animals, and especially dragonflies. Günter, thanks so much for joining me today.
Hi, Andrew. Nice to talk.
Well, today I'd like to explore whether the fossil record of insects poses a problem for Darwinian evolution. And I thought you would be just the person to discuss that with me.
I hope so.
So you're a paleoentomologist, that is, a specialist on fossil insects. Many people may think that such delicate animals must be very rare as fossils, at least compared to organisms with hard parts, like shells or bones. How would you characterize the fossil record of insects and its completeness?
Well, at the time, let's say, of Charles Darwin, of course, fossil insects really were rare as fossils. But meanwhile, the fossil record of insects is very rich. There's an estimate of something like 15,000 species of fossil insects having been described. They are often very well preserved, even with soft tissues and minuscule details visible and color pattern preserved. And the fossil record of insect reaches from the lower Devonian more than 400 million years ago till the Holocene, so till recent times, with only very few gaps. So one of the few remaining gaps would be the time between the upper Devonian and lower Carboniferous. And just as an example, my predecessor in position at the Natural History Museum in Stuttgart, Willy Hennig, the founder of cladistics, of phylogenetic systematics, he wrote a famous book in 1968 on the evolution of insects. And in his book, he wrote one of the most unfortunate lacks of our knowledge of the fossil record of insects is the Lower Cretaceous. And it's such an important time because there the co-evolution started between insects and flowering plants. And meanwhile, this gap has been completely closed. We are literally drowning in 10,000s of fossil insects from this time. I myself have certainly seen something like 50,000 fossil insects from the Lower Cretaceous of Brazil. And there are similar localities from China and amber localities like Burmese amber. So a lot of previous gaps in our knowledge of the fossil record of insects have been closed. And this record is now covering all modern orders, most families. And it's quite rare that new taxa, let's say new higher taxa, like new insect orders are described. And this means that we have reached a certain saturation point in terms of sampling the fossil record. So we can be quite confident that if we see gaps in the fossil record, discontinuities, then it can no longer be explained away as an artifact of undersampling.
Sure. Wow, sounds quite representative then for insects. So if we did some time traveling together, let's say, what would we find in the insect world at various intervals in the past? Say 50 million, 150 million, 250 million, and so on, years ago.
Right. So sometimes as a paleontologist, you, of course, would like to have a time machine and do such a kind of time travel to really check if the facts match the theory. Let's say from what we do know, if we go back 50 million years, we would be in the time of the Baltic amber deposits, for example, and we would find a pretty modern insect fauna, more or less the same or very similar genera as today. Different species, but only minuscule differences, so no entomologist today would be excited to see any of the insects flying around 50 million years ago. So if we go back further 100 million years to 150 million years ago, we would be in the time of the Upper Jurassic. That's the time where Archaeopteryx lived. And we would find many modern families, also some extinct families, but very similar to the modern fauna. but different genera, of course. And if we go back a further 100 million years, we would be in the Permian period, beginning of the transition between Permian and the Triassic about 250 million years ago. And there would be mostly modern insect orders, all of them basically, but different families. And further 100 million years ago would be 350 million years ago, we would be in the lower Carboniferous and would find modern superorders. So something like the giant Carboniferous dragonflies with 60 centimeters wingspan or giant mayflies, or extinct groups like the Paleodicteropterans, which were large flying insect with sucking, piercing mouth parts. And we would find insects like locusts and roaches, but also relatively modern ones like beetles or plant wasps. And finally, if we go back 450 million years ago, we would find small wingless insects, for example, springtails or silverfish, something like that.
Wow. A busy sky, both now and in the past.
Yeah.
Well, according to evolutionists, insects should have originated from marine arthropods somewhere in the Paleozoic. What does the actual fossil evidence show about this evolutionary transition, and in particular about a transition from ocean to land?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Actually, evolutionists are quite disappointed that there is almost nothing or really nothing. So we have no fossil evidence at all for this transition, let's say, from ancestral marine arthropods to real insects, even though from the crucial window of time, from the Cambrian to the Devonian, we have a vast fossil record of marine invertebrates and marine arthropods, but there's nothing there, which shows that there has been a transition between these arthropod groups. And there was one alleged candidate, has been described as the Bono hexapodus, or Vingercellicus from the Lower Devonian Hunsrück Shale of Germany. But this has been later refuted, very convincingly refuted as a stem insect, and is meanwhile considered to be a crustacean. And there's also no fossil record at all for this kind of transition in terms of way of life, from marine way of life to terrestrial way of life, which involves certain reconstructions of the body plan. And all the oldest insects that we do know, they are already fully terrestrial, like modern ones.
Huh. Well, you mentioned that the earliest fossil insects were totally wingless. How did wings
right.
originate? Is there evidence for gradual Darwinian evolution of this organ?
No, again, the answer is unfortunately for Darwinists, no. The oldest winged insects that we have found in the fossil record are from the border between the lower and the upper Carboniferous. That's about 320 million years ago. And they already have perfectly developed wings with this very sophisticated wing articulation and wing venation and so on. And there was one putative intermediate, in a way, described in a giant Carboniferous silverfish of the genus Carbotriplura. And this animal, it's a wingless insect, a large, 10-centimeter large wingless insect with somewhat broadened thoracic and abdominal back plates, so these so-called abdominal and thoracic lobes. And it has been described as sister group of winged insects by a certain German paleontologist called Günter Beckley and his colleagues in 2014 in systematic entomology. But actually, it doesn't have anything like real wings. Of course, not even something that you could call gliding foils. If you look at the animal and compare it, for example, with some types of modern beetle larvae, which have this kind of trilobite-like body structure. There's, for example, the genus Platerodrilus or Dolichocola. And they are completely terrestrial, even though they have larger expansions of these thoracic lobes, and they do not glide. So it's quite controversial if this animal really is intermediate between wingless and winged insects. And otherwise, there are just theories. So we have basically two competing theories about insect wing origins. One is the more classic theory, the paranotal theory. And this theory proposes that wings originated from these kind of broadened lobes, from stiff lateral expansions of the dorsal exoskeleton. So as you probably know, insects have an exoskeleton and not an endoskeleton as vertebrates have. So that would be one theory. And the other theory is a little bit newer. It's called the excite theory, and there it is suggested that wings originated from flattened mobile leg appendages. And the strange thing for Darwinian evolution is that both theories seem to have good fossil, good ontogenetic, and good genetic support, evo-devo support, but they can't be both true. So this led to quite some confusion among evolutionists.
Wow. That's so interesting. So, Günther, what do the oldest fossil insects look like? Are they in any way different from modern ones?
That's what evolutionists would hope, but no. Even if you look at the oldest fossil insects that we have, that would be from the Lower Devonian period, they already belong to modern insect orders, maybe even modern families. And that is of wingless insects like springtails and silverfish and bristletails. And what's interesting is that they already have all the sophisticated morphology of these modern insect groups. So, for example, if you look at the oldest really completely preserved fossil insects, which is the springtail Runyella precursor, found at the 410 million year old Devonian Rhynie chert from Scotland. And Runyella already has all the typical characters of modern springtails. So it has these internalized mouth parts. It has a jumping device called furca. It has a unpaired tube-like osmoregulatory organ on the belly called colophore. And so it's basically indistinguishable from a living springtail that you may find in your flower pot at home. And that is, of course, quite surprising if you think that's more than 400 million years old and is the oldest fossil insect that we do know. And we should expect to find something intermediate leading to the basic body plan of insects and not a modern representative of a modern insect order.
Well, one striking feature of many modern insects, like beetles and butterflies, is this remarkable metamorphosis from a caterpillar-like larva to a winged adult via a pupal stage, in which the whole body is dissolved into a kind of soup and then reorganized into a different body plan. I'm curious, what does the fossil record say about the origins of this highly complex mode of development?
Now, about this issue, there was also a documentary made by Illustra Media, and it's indeed surprising because according to Neo-Darwinian theory, of course, we should expect to find some fossil documentation of this major transition in terms of development, and especially a gradual transition with tiny steps, and the fossil evidence actually falsifies this evolutionary prediction from Neo-Darwinism. So we already do find holometabolous insects, so that's insects with this complete development with a pupal stage in which the body is more or less dissolved into a kind of soup. We already find representatives of these groups in the Carboniferous. So there we find beetles, and we find hymenopterans, that would be something like plant wasps, for example, or mycopterans, scorpion flies. And they appear in the same period together where you find these giant dragonflies with 60 or 70 centimeters wingspan. And we also have fossils of caterpillar-like insect larvae from the same period, more than 300 million years ago. But what is totally lacking is any kind of fossil evidence for a transition from hemimetabolous to holometabolous insects. That would be from insects that develop by continuous molting of a larval stage that gets successively more similar to the adult, to this very curious complete metamorphosis with this pupal stage. So there is no fossil record that documents this.
Hmm. Well, it's such a mystery, that process of metamorphosis, and it's interesting to see what the fossil record's showing when it comes to that. Well, given that you say the fossil record of insects is very good, I'm surprised that the fossils say almost nothing about the postulated major transitions. Do fossil insects provide any evidence for macroevolution at all? And where do all those millions of years old fossil insects fit into the classification of modern insects?
Ah, okay. So that's two questions. So to take the first part, is there any evidence for macroevolution? That, of course, depends how we define macroevolution. If it's just in terms of common ancestry, then indeed there are some pieces of evidence that can be elegantly explained with common ancestry. So there are some cases of successful predictions based on the assumption of common ancestry that were later confirmed by fossil evidence. I even had such cases in my own work on dragonfly genitalia, for example. But these are quite rare exceptions from the rule. And not at this general order in the fossil record where fossil insects become less similar to modern ones the older they are or the deeper you go in the geological column. And this, of course, is also quite elegantly explained with common ancestry. But there are also alternative explanations, and maybe it would go too far to elaborate on them here. But I co-authored a chapter together with Steve Meyer in this recent major opus against theistic evolution. And in this chapter, we introduced a possibility to explain this pattern in the fossil record without the assumption of common ancestry. So it's not a unique explanation for this type of evidence. But generally, if we look at the fossil record of insects, you can say all these fossil insects you can put into categories. Either they belong to totally extinct taxa that have once lived and do not live any longer, like these Paleodichthyopterans from the Carboniferous, or they already belong within modern groups. And what is mostly lacking and strikingly lacking are the fossil conformations for those postulated ancestral lineages that should connect the branches. So overall, the fossil record does pose a problem for the Neo-Darwinian scenario.
Hmm. Well, based on your expertise on the fossil history of insects, then, what would you conclude about their alleged origin by Darwinian evolution?
Now, as I just said, the fundamental prediction of Darwinism, which is gradual appearance and transition of groups and transition between groups and gradual appearance and transition of body plans, this is clearly contradicted by the fossil record. Mm-hmm. And there are several phenomena that we do find that are much better explained by the hypothesis of intelligent design than by Darwinian evolution. And this would be, of course, these discontinuities, so these abrupt appearances of groups that appear out of nowhere, and of new body plans followed by long periods of stasis where there's not much change and there are only plays with the motifs of these body plans. And then there's the lack of the fossil record for gradual transitions on nearly every taxonomic level, also on the lower taxonomic levels. The fact that I also already mentioned that most fossils fall in the terminal branches of the phylogenetic trees or the cladograms, not on the postulated common stems. The fact that if you look for similarities, that this phenomenon that is called homoplasy or convergence, so that similarities are incongruent and are not easily explained by common ancestry, this phenomenon is not just some accidental noise. It's abundant and it's rather the rule than an exception, which of course contradicts the expectation from Darwinism. And finally, this fact that sometimes you have mutually exclusive evolutionary scenarios and both are corroborated by substantial evidence, but cannot both be true. And if Darwinism is true and common ancestry is true, then you should expect that the more evidence you look at, all the evidence should converge to confirm one scenario is true and refute the others. So that's very strange as well. So if we take all these anomalies together, then they show that, let's say, a simplistic explanation as common descent with modification based on random mutation and natural selection, this certainly fails to explain the empirical data.
So it would behoove us then to, instead of looking at the fossil record as this picture of gradual change with ancestors, we really ought to be looking at it as periods of stasis interrupted by swift periods of novelty and change. Is that right?
That's completely correct. And it's not only in the Cambrian explosion, it's all over the place. At every level you look at, if it is origin of, let's say, mammals or birds or even the genus Homo, and all over the place in the insect realm. So that's exactly right. It's a story of explosive origins and long periods of stasis.
Very interesting. Well, Günther, thanks so much for taking time to speak with us today.
My pleasure.
And I hope we can speak more about the fossil record and your writing and your work related to it in other episodes.
You bet.
Well, to learn more about Dr. Günther Bechli's work, visit his website, www.bechli.at. That's BECHLY.AT. To hear more interviews with Günther Bechli and others in the intelligent design research community, hop on over to IDTheFuture.com or search for the show in your favorite podcast app. For ID The Future, I'm Andrew McDermott. Thanks for listening.
In recent years, great leaps in DNA sequencing technologies have empowered scientists to study DNA as never before. But will Darwin's theory of evolution stand the test of this new data, this increasing evidence for design and purpose? You can find out when you read Michael Behe's revolutionary new book, Darwin Devolves, now available in bookstores and online at darwindevolves.com.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID The Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.